Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Cinnamon Caligula to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is reductio ad Hitlerum, also known as playing the Nazi card.
Yeah, so we have kind of talked about this a bit. Back in episode 17, we did the guilt by association fallacy.
Yeah.
One of our examples from King of the Hill was this, because essentially it is a very specific version of guilt by association. It is connecting people in some way to Hitler. It is suggesting that because they are like Hitler in some way, whether it's, in that case, it was kind of banning cigarettes, which I don't think he did, or being a vegetarian or liking dogs or any of the things that kind of could be associated with Hitler, that means you're a fascist dictator.
Living in an eagle's nest,
yeah.
Being a house painter. Yeah,
absolutely. So we kind of touched on it in that one, but this is more specifically about that exact thing, being like Hitler or being like a Nazi.
So it's kind of on the political spectrum, it's the opposite of being like a communist.
Exactly, because we did, that a couple of episodes ago. Also, as well as the guilt by association, it is a false analogy, because chances are most of the people who are being compared to Hitler aren't really like Hitler in many ways.
Yeah.
Maybe in one way, but probably not in the ways that they are being implied as being like Hitler.
And the one person that was like Hitler in a very specific way, Charlie Chaplin, nobody actually kind of realised that until he did, the great dictator.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, yeah, look, same mustache.
Well, I mean,
look at that. We
to be fair, Chaplin
time.
And Oliver Hardy had that first. And it was, Hitler ruined the toothbrush mustache for everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Mugabe with his...
Yeah, he just didn't, he did it anyway. Didn't care.
It was kind of a bit, I hesitate to use the word chic about Robert Mugabe.
You thought it looked good on him, did you?
Well, it was a kind of a stripped down sort of gigolo version of the Hitler moustache, in that it was a tiny stripe.
It was less ostentatious than Hitler.
Yeah, but in a way, more so, because you'd have to spend a lot of time to get that completely right every bloody day, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of...
It's like the kind of the soul patch of Hitler moustaches. Our first example is a tweet from Trump just after BuzzFeed published the first details of the Steele dossier. And Trump said, intelligence agencies should never have allowed this fake news to leak into the public. One last shot at me. Are we living in Nazi Germany? And I think he was being very ambitious / optimistic to assume that this, back in January of 2017, was one last shot at him. There was plenty of other shots to come.
Plenty to come. Not enough ammo to take all of the shots that he deserves. Yes.
So... Yeah. His idea of the fact that a let's call them a news outlet. It's BuzzFeed, but their news side has done some good work. The idea that a news outlet leaking a story that is in the public interest is Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
It's not a great analogy. It's not close to the things that happened back then.
Apocryphally, yes, exactly. We kind of No, something to do with completely the opposite of that.
Yeah. It's just this weird persecution complex that Republicans seem to have, where anything bad that happens to them is equated with the worst thing you can think of.
Yeah, but mostly in terms of towards the right. So perhaps they kind of live in the shadow of. Yeah, if we're not too careful, we might be compared with Hitler's Germany, you know, because we're a little bit on the right wing, aren't we? We're going slightly. They don't kind of worry about being compared to Chavez or, you know, Stalin or anything like that. They don't worry about the spectre of extreme left wingers. They just worry about being compared to. So when they kind of whine and. They go, oh, you're persecuting us. You're comparing us to Hitler.
And to be fair, we have been guilty of that occasionally.
Yeah.
This is a thing that we've done, often because of things that they've done which are quite Hitler-y.
Hitler-y, yeah. little bit Nazist.
Yeah. And I hope that when we've done it, we have pointed out comparisons without directly saying this makes them like Hitler. Maybe we've done it sometimes, but at least
we've added the context. We've added the kind of correct kind of contextual analogy. So we've erred towards the right end of the insult spectrum insofar as we've set the context correctly.
Yeah.
We're going, well, you know, this kind of banning of books that mention rainbow-coloured unicorns, they're not dissimilar to the banning of books and dissident art and then an entire religious...
I think that's a fair point that I'm... Well... Jumping on, you're making it in an attempt to defend ourselves against this, is that, you are specifically looking at a particular aspect and saying, this is a thing which the Nazis did, which was bad, not just because they were Nazis, but the thing they did was
bad. It was a bad thing.
That thing is happening now, or something very similar to that thing. And it's so bad, it's a kind of thing the Nazis did. Whereas what often happens is a little bit of hyperbole, where it's a small, unimportant, not a big deal thing that happens, and people go, this is just like Hitler. And as a way of offering those kinds of examples, back when we did Guilt by Association, it was in 2019, and we didn't have... Marjorie Taylor Greene to think about back then. Oh, wasn't it great when we didn't have to think about Marjorie Taylor Greene? I was thinking, because I wanted to make sure that she wasn't like around and a big thing when we did it, because I was like, why didn't we talk about her? Yeah. And I looked it up, and can you believe we've only been thinking about Marjorie Taylor Greene since like November 2020. Wow. That was when she won her election.
Yeah.
So there was a bit, she was campaigning a bit before that, but... I can't believe it's only been that amount of time that she's been elected arsehole.
Occupies a...
Before that, she was just citizen.
It's just an arsehole. Citizen arsehole. Yeah. Attempting to run for office, elected arsehole.
But she does have a little bit of a tendency to invoke Hitler and Nazis. Mm. And I've got a few examples.
Right.
Starting just a few days before our Guilt by Association episode, actually.
Oh, okay,
January 11th, 2019. She took aim at a conservative who praised Ruth Bader Ginsburg, tweeting, that's kind of like saying, while I don't agree with Hitler, you have to admit what he accomplished in his lifetime is impressive. So, kind of directly comparing RBG to Hitler, in a way. It's like, it's not okay to say she did good
inaccurately.
Stuff.
Completely inaccurately, yeah.
Because... Because, you know, it's a bit like doing that with Hitler.
bit like saying nice, smart uniforms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Say what you like about Mussolini, he made the trains run on time kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. He was a bit of a bad guy, but he painted some nice houses. You know, if it's like the Mussolini, say what you like about him. He did put up some nice buildings. He invented an entire brutalist architectural movement.
I think Jimmy Carr said, say what you like about Hitler, but he did kill Hitler.
Yeah. So. Yes. Which, and now that's quite funny because it's ultimately self-referential, disappears up its own gag punchline. But yeah, that's the thing about this reductio ad Hitlerum. It's lazy.
It's the slogan version of an insult, isn't it? Basically, it's light locker up, but comparing a person to a bad thing. It's just the easiest and quickest and least nuanced way to say someone is bad.
Yeah, and just saying that, a bit like the soccer mom when we read the QAnon, An Invitation to the Great Awakening, the self-confessed soccer mom and conspiracy theorist who said about the Democrats or about the Clintons, with their kinky art-collecting friends.
Oh, yeah, the Podestas.
It's no more than I would expect from them. And that's when it's just, you don't have to make any argument at all because all you're doing is playing to people who go, yes, we know what you mean. You know, it's like Stuart Lee pointing out to people who go to his gigs who then agree with him when he makes an observation and people kind of laugh and clap. He said, don't agree with me. Don't just agree with me. You know, think about it. Think about what you
do. Oh, I agree the fuck out of that.
Exactly. Yeah. I may not have had a good time, but I agreed the fuck out of what he was saying. Yeah.
So in May of 2021, she had a bit of a run of Nazi-related comments. On the 22nd, she said on a Conservative podcast about the House mask mandate, you know, we can look back at a time in history where people were told to wear a gold star and they were definitely treated like second-class citizens, so much so they were put in trains and taken to gas chambers in Nazi Germany. And this is exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about. Exactly the type. Like fining people $5,000 for not wearing a mask in Congress is exactly the same as putting them on a train and sending them
to the gas chambers. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
The fact that they're using different words, it's neither here nor there, because it's exactly...
The fact that you can avoid it all just by putting a mask on.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. So... Yeah. Then 3 days later, she tweeted about a supermarket that was adding logos to vaccinated employees' badges. Vaccinated employees get a vaccination logo just like Nazis forced Jewish people to wear a gold star.
What?
The Nazis weren't going, well done, you're a Jew. Well done. It wasn't.
Yeah. Thank you for being Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No.
So is it... Yeah, it's a because the gold star, well, it was a yellow star, but was a mark of
a second class citizen, essentially.
Yes, exactly. It was to point out to them that these people are
not to be treated as humans.
Yeah, and you can quite happily abuse them, and in fact, we encourage you to do that.
Yeah,
and yet the people who've been vaccinated. They've been
to say these people are safe to go and ask a question about whether you have this kind of thing in a size 6
quite safe that you know they they probably are wearing a mask because they're in the store and also they're vaccinated, so if you're at all worried that they might have COVID you needn't worry because they're wearing a mask and also we can identify that they were. Well, because she was a great thing that the vaccination was an imposition from the deep state, you know, to get you hooked on adrenochrome.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore was a mark of the beast. So if you had the vaccination, you were, well, A, you had it by force, and B, we're now going to shame you in public for being subjected to force and willingly surrendering. And all that kind of...
She would have had, and I'm seal-botting a bit, she would have had a point it had been done the other way round. If they were putting, if they were making unvaccinated employees wear something specific to show...
And all ring of a bell the, and go,
to wear an armband or a gold star or something on their uniform to show that they were unvaccinated...
Yep.
So that people knew to avoid them, if they didn't want to be around unvaccinated people. That would be, it would still be stupid, but it would be closer to what she's claiming.
Yes.
Because it denotes people as someone to kind of stay away from in a way.
Yes.
And completely responsibly and sensibly, it wouldn't, yeah. I would still be behind it and think it was a good idea.
Yeah. But it would have a little bit more validity in what she's saying. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's something about the use of the reductio ad Hitlerum by the right wing that is always completely the opposite of what's actually happening.
Yeah.
They do it in order to distract you from the sensibleness of what's going on and from the mildness of what's going on. So they swing you way across the other side to pump up your ire, and they pump up your ire. So you kind of go, oh, yeah, no, that's bloody terrible. And it's really bloody terrible rather than, well, actually, it's a small thing that people have just done. It's a bit like the people getting up in arms because one of the supermarket chains in the UK allowed employees, if they wanted to put on their name badge their preferred pronouns. And the right-wing press, of course, burst to several blood vessels in their eyeballs in their rage, because this was exactly like Nazi Germany, where people were forced to declare who they are and what they are, like it's important. And people go, oh, it was a bank, I think. And people closed down their accounts and took their money away. And you think,
it's all right, so
bizarre. Well, actually, if you're going to do that, you're not the kind of customer I really would want through my doors.
Yeah.
If you're going to get incensed about that kind of thing. So it becomes it was a very gentle, consensual, communal thing that just said, if you would like to, if that makes you feel more comfortable, of course you can do that.
Yeah.
Of course you can.
I am very much in favour of some shops, banks, brands becoming ones that right-wingers boycott completely and them having their own places to go. So that, because that means we're less likely then to come into contact with these fucking arseholes when we go to the supermarket that doesn't accept that kind of thing.
You'd have to walk past the right-wing supermarket and the right-wing bank. It would, the noise, can you imagine the noise?
Plan a route round them, that'd be fine.
It would be like going past the bank or the corner shop in Free Guy every morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody would come bursting through the glass door. Somebody would go running in and hold the place up. That would be the right-wing outlets. Would be exactly like that. People go, this is exactly like Nazi Germany, and then firing several hundred rounds into the ceiling and then falling to the ground going, okay, here we go again.
So 3 days after that, at a rally with Matt Gaetz,
she is on a roll.
She pointed to the fact that the Nazi Party was officially the National Socialist German Workers' Party and claimed that that meant they were just like the Democratic Party, which is, she said, now a National Socialist Party.
Yeah.
And then someone had a word.
Yeah.
And in June, she visited the Holocaust Museum and then publicly apologised for her words comparing things to the Holocaust and things to the Nazis and saying, look, this is, you know, completely, I understand it's offensive, it's unacceptable, and I apologise for the offence that I've caused by making these comparisons. Nothing should be compared to the Holocaust, and all of this stuff's very, very bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's awful. 3 weeks later, she talked about the plan to launch a door-to-door vaccine information effort, tweeting, people don't need your medical brown shirts showing up at their door.
Oh, my God. Is this around the time that Mitch McConnell talked about censuring her for these outrageous outbursts?
It was after the whole kind of the run of Nazi stuff in May,
I think he
actually got involved.
I did do an edit of that speech as an advert for my band, The Outbursts, when he talked about trying to control these outbursts. It's very funny.
And she's still doing it. In February of this year, she famously accused Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police of spying on members of Congress.
Because they're secretly warming it up. They're going, oh no, this is quite, it's a bit weird. This. Have you got cold tomato sauce? I have. Yeah. Well, no, just put it in the microwave. Uh-huh. And then the gazpacho police going, are you putting that in the microwave? No. I'm just storing it in there because the fridge was full. You've got to drink it cold. It's gazpacho. Brilliant. That's excellent. That's uh-huh. it's befitting of a completely ignorant person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about to try and invoke the ad Hitlerum, but misspelling it.
It's like when Lauren Boebert accused Biden of making a decisive speech because she's too stupid to call him divisive.
Divisive, yes. Yeah. Brilliant.
So, yeah. And actually speaking of that decisive, divisive speech.
Yeah.
When Biden spoke to the nation about fighting essentially for the heart of America.
Yeah.
In front of Philadelphia's Independence Hall, and which was lit behind him in red, white, and blue. Lots of right-wingers kind of cropped that image so that it was just him with the red behind him in the middle.
Yeah.
And then likened it to Hitler. And Marjorie Taylor Greene on September 2nd of this year tweeted a picture of that with the caption, Joe Biden is Hitler. And the hashtag Nazi Joe has to go.
It's just like, it's just stripped out all pretense of analogy or anything and just calling him Hitler. Just going Nazi Joe and calling Joe Biden Hitler. Joe Biden is Hitler. Mm.
They can't decide, and we've said this before, they can't decide if he is an ineffectual old man with dementia who can't get anything done. Or a fascist dictator.
Yeah.
You literally can't be both.
Can't be both. No.
If there was a fascist dictator who was old and doddering and couldn't do anything, it wouldn't matter. He wouldn't. There would be nothing to fear from that.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. There would be so many people fighting to take his place for one, because, you know, we know that's how revolutionaries work. Yeah. Wow. And also, not only is he Hitler, he's also Lenin.
Yeah. So, somehow.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
And she's still in elected office?
Amazingly, yeah. Yeah, it's not been enough for them to really even censure her at all.
No.
Yeah. No. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, because who's going to censure? The right wing isn't, because that's all they've got. You know, we're heading into midterms. It's all they've got. Just going, yeah, just let her rant. It'll convince some people. Uh-huh. Just let her do it. We've got to get, all the votes
thing
in.
Is it probably will.
Yeah, exactly.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, of course, when it comes to reductio ad Hitlerum, our thoughts turn to the dearly departed, Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who was pretty much always depicted by artist Cold War Steve in his photoshopped Hogarthian etchings, goose-stepping in jackboots, laughing at the fate of refugees. So our first example is a tweet from Ian Austin, who tweets under @LordIanAustin, who was a Labour MP and the trade envoy to Israel. He also describes himself as a cyclist, AVFC, Aston Villa Football Club, and he helped beat Corbyn and the hard left and would do it again. And he finishes with clowns to the left, jokers to the right. So I'm not quite sure where he is, but he lives in Dudley, in the Midlands. So he was a Labour MP, possibly is now in the House of Lords. Not quite sure, given that he's describing the left clowns to the left, jokers to the right. Yeah, where is he stuck in the middle with Starmer, probably. Anyway, so I'm not quite sure what his complaint is when he tweeted about the victory of the Lib Dems' Helen Morgan in the North Shropshire by-election in 2021. She won with a 34% swing from the Conservatives. This was the first time anyone other than Conservatives won since the seat was established in the 30s. There was a by-election following the resignation of Tory MP Owen Paterson, who was disgraced and for whom Boris tried to change the rules of measuring levels of disgrace, which we've discussed before. And he tweeted, North Shropshire has an MP who accused Priti Patel of behaving like Goebbels, said the decision to prorogue Parliament was what Hitler did, and likened the experience of Channel migrants to Jewish prisoners at Auschwitz. Great. So I'm not sure what his complaint is. Is his complaint that Helen called out Patel's behaviour? Is that what his complaint is? Is it that she trivialises the fate of the victims of the Holocaust? Or is it that she's just not Labour, because she's Lib Dems, and thus beyond the reach of Starmer's purge of the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party? But the actual tweet that he's complaining about was in a 2021 response to a Twitter post from Priti Patel about asylum seekers crossing the channel in small boats. And Helen Morgan had tweeted, please tear up your copy of Goebbels' manual. And in 2019, she published the following tweet regarding Boris Johnson's attempt to prorogue Parliament. It's what Hitler did in 1933. This is a shameless power grab by a right-wing elite. And despite the truths of the statements, because it is what Hitler did.
Yeah, yeah.
And what Priti Patel was trying to put in place was what Goebbels did. So despite the truth of the statements, the problem with the reductio ad Hitlerum is that it ignites opposition and gives that opposition fuel to be incandescent with righteous rage, and in the process, and just being incandescent with righteous, they're just angry, and thus that anger, so it's also an appeal to vehemence, distracts people from the truth, and it gives the right-wing press the chance to describe any later apology, which Helen Morgan had to make, as forced to make a grovelling apology. And they even do their own reductio ad Hitlerum. The Mail Online of November 24, 2021 says, a Tory campaigner told Mail Online, given that the Lib Dem candidate thinks Brexit is akin to the rise of the Third Reich, it's almost surprising to see she's been whitewashing her biography to hide her enthusiastic support for overturning the referendum result. What they're saying is, she's saying that Brexit is the Third Reich, but what she is doing is akin to Hitler's Germany. So is that whitewashing or support for overturning? Are those Hitlerian acts?
I don't know. Yeah, it's not clear what they're trying to say. And frankly, the Mail, of anyone, given their enthusiastic support for Hitler, really need to fucking stay out of this debate.
Exactly. Yeah.
They should not be the ones calling people out for being a bit like Hitler. Because
a bit Hitlery. Yes.
Yeah.
Because they
in the past they would have just gone great. Yeah. Excellent. Well done for that.
Yeah.
Exact
nice
behavior.
Guy getting rid of all the people we fucking don't like. Hell. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And see, that's the other thing about reductio ad Hitlerum, that you can be incensed about what somebody has said by invoking Hitler. You go, well, what you've just said is tantamount to Hitler's Germany, and people just go, yes, bloody hell, that which raises the anger and disgust at what Hitler did.
I don't think that's the problem, I don't think the problem is that it raises anger about what Hitler did. I think that's fine. I think it does raise the general level of anger and incivility, let's call it that, of the debate as a whole. It does not lead to a calming down of emotions when you accuse someone of being Hitler or being like Hitler.
I think it's an appeal to yeah, you know, yeah, right, Hitler, right? And everybody goes, yeah, fucking hell, Hitler, Jesus Christ. But that's all you need to do. It's a bit like being in a covers band. You're playing cover songs. If you play a fairly decent version of the original, people tend to remember the original song and think you've done a good job of it. I mean, it's a bad analogy, but, you know, because I'm not comparing covers bands to Hitler.
Oh, I so almost spit out my beer at that. That was so... The idea of like a fairly good cover band of Hitler.
That's almost,
oh, Jesus.
That's almost Python-esque.
Mr. Hilter.
Mr. Hilter, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's also the other thing about when you reduce it to Hitler, you can walk away. That's it. You've let off the Hitler bomb. You can walk away and people just go, God, bloody hell. They've just got a fuming and banging the desk and thinking, quite right. Yes, that's, yeah, kill the witch. So the second example, in June 2022, back when Boris is only ever so slightly right of centre in comparison to Truss's government, was in, well, I hesitate to say in charge, but when Boris was the Prime Minister, in June 15th Prime Minister's questions, Keir Starmer points out some of the things Boris's backbenchers think of him.
This is a document circulated by his backbench, in which they call him the Conservative Corbyn. Prime Minister, I don't think that was intended as a compliment.
Somebody shouts, exactly, and you go, well, what exactly do you mean by that? But in response to that, going out on that day, on the 15th of June, Tristan Cross, who's a content producer and comedian, don't know, has a website, it's got some comic-shaped things on it. He quipped on Twitter in response to Boris Johnson's Conservative Corbyn, Adolf Hitler is the Nazi Keir Starmer.
I'm really not sure what he's going for.
No,
I understand the joke-shaped statement, similar to the thing that the Conservative Corbyn, but it doesn't.
Yeah,
really yes, mean that, anything.
Yeah, no, it's just as unfunny. But for me, even when demonstrating the ridiculousness of the instant collapse of argument that is reductio ad Hitlerum, so you just kind of you fire off the mention of Adolf Hitler. And that everything just falls down around your ears, and that's the end of the argument, kind of stuff. I don't know what he's going for. It doesn't succeed because it lacks sufficient context. Stuart Lee, and we talked about it before, does similar reductio ad absurdums. Go look at the Paul Nuttalls of the UKIPs example that we've talked about before. And his immigration policies, which goes as far as demanding, so in Stuart Lee's riff, it goes as far as demanding fish go into back into the sea and not evolving onto the land. So what Stuart Lee is doing is building for his statement, which is preposterous, an immense, if absolutely bonkers, context. But he knows the need for a context in order to make a statement as controversial as Adolf Hitler's a Nazi Keir Starmer. And indeed, Stuart Lee in the Guardian column of June the 19th, 2022, characterises Priti Patel's illegal immigrant deportation policy as Schrodinger's Rwanda. And the final paragraph says, the pockets of protesters currently engaged in street battles against police forced to carry out snatch raids on immigrants are a last line of defence against the Home Office that cannot be trusted to act ethically. Your children study the rise of Hitler in history and are asked how the people of 30s Germany allowed their country to slide into fascism. Well, now we can tell them. Kids, look out of the classroom window. It was like this. So there's Stuart Lee painting the entirety of the compliant Tory voting populace as Nazi sympathisers.
The thing is, as I said earlier, we have been guilty of invoking Hitler and Nazis and stuff, talking about Trump.
Yeah.
When you're in a situation where there are kind of lists out there created by historians and experts on the Third Reich and fascism in general and things like that, of how a society moves towards fascism, mm-hmm. and what the benchmarks are that you need to watch out for, in case these things should happen. And like a good 80 to 90% of those things are happening, there's a point at which it becomes okay to to keep to mention it occasionally and say
it becomes not necessary.
It's
not fallacious to mention it.
I mean, Godwin, the guy who came up with Godwin's law about the longer a conversation on the internet, essentially an argument on the internet goes on, the more likely Hitler is to be brought up. He said a couple of years ago, you know, talk about Trump and Hitler all the time, for as far as I'm concerned, that you know, there are times when it's warranted.
It's not something to be dismissed. That's the thing. And perhaps in the strength and bluntness and frequency of Marjorie Taylor Greene's announcements, what that of the rise of narcissism in the Democratic Party, what is normally true in political circles is that the people that are doing it accuse the other lot of doing what they're doing. That's possibly a litmus test.
Oddly, ironically, I think that was a tactic of Goebbels. It was accuse the other side of the thing of which you are guilty. Was specifically one of his.
And also ideas. The thing about wasn't that him keep telling the lie?
Yeah.
And often enough, if you control the media through which the lies are being told, keep telling the lie, and eventually it'll become the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. Who won the election in 2020? And who maintains that they didn't? And what? How do they deal with that? Well, they just keep telling the lie. It is the Goebbels playbook.
I mean, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it in this episode.
So, yeah.
But yeah.
You know, so sue me. Who do you think you are kidding, Quasi Quarteng? If you think we'll trickle down, we see straight through your wild fallacies. We see you resting in quantitative ease. Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Quarteng? You're bringing England to its knees. Bud Flanagan there with the theme from Dad's Army.
So in The Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And this week, we start with a clip from Community. And actually, this is the same episode as the clip that I played on our last episode.
Ah.
And in this episode, one of the main plots is that Jack Black is a new student, although there's kind of some retconning that suggests he's actually been there the whole time, where he is trying to get to be one of the group, one of the study group. And they don't like him. He's annoying. And they're trying to get rid of him.
Buddy, just be reasonable and go.
Make me. Hitler.
Okay, so since Buddy's not leaving, he'll just be the person who we wish wasn't here while we study. Try getting that deal from Hitler.
It just says Hitler. That's ultimately what Marjorie Taylor Greene will be doing at the next something or other. She'll just get on stage and go, Hitler! And then people just go, yeah, you're bloody right. Raising one arm in a straight arm salute, obviously.
Yeah.
But they'll just go, yeah, you're so right. God, he is. Who are we talking about? Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff, in this particularly, is trying to be absolutely as conciliatory as possible and saying, look, you know, just kind of be reasonable. Just you know, it's clear that you're not really gelling with the group, just kind of decide on your own to go. And it's like, and that's what what compels him to call him Hitler.
And then he goes, that's kind of, it works.
It gets the reaction.
Seems he won't be leaving.
So our second example comes from Office Space, the fantastic Mike Judge film. I'm gonna say something controversial here.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Beavis and Butthead.
What?
I don't think it's funny. It's weird. I don't get how Mike Judge can make Beavis and Butthead, and also things like Office Space and Idiocracy.
Yeah.
They're so good, and that is I don't get it. But sorry about that. Anyone who really likes Beavis and Butthead, but Office Space is fantastic. And in this scene, Peter Gibbons, Ron Livingston, has just told Jennifer Aniston, Joanna, about their scheme to steal lots of money in a way that is, as far as he's concerned, absolutely fine. It's not a big deal, but she thinks it's bad.
I don't know, it just seems wrong.
It's not wrong. Inatech is wrong. Inatech is an evil corporation, all right? Tchotchkes is wrong. Doesn't it bother you that you have to get up in the morning and you have to put on a bunch of pieces of flair?
Yeah, but I'm not about to go in and start taking money from the register.
Well, maybe you should. You know, the Nazis had pieces of flair, but they made the Jews wear.
What?
So the restaurant she works in, Tchotchkes, makes... Yeah. Their employees wear kind of suspenders with buttons, like badges and things on.
Right.
And they have a minimum number, and she's constantly getting in trouble for only having the minimum, even though it is allowed to have the minimum. But her manager is like, well, you know, yeah, but it's just a minimum. Don't you want to express yourself and have like more? Look at this guy, he's got 37. And the fact that they make them wear badges and buttons and things. He is equating that to the Nazis making Jews wear flair.
Flares. Yeah.
And that's a quite a good example, I think, of just taking one thing that is not, I mean, it's not even similar, but it is something that you can say is the same thing. And then suggesting that because that in that one way they are similar to Nazis.
Yeah.
Therefore, they are similar in other ways too, implying that they are therefore evil.
Yeah, and that they are therefore not only similar, but exactly the same as, in so far as we ascribe the evil nastiness to the subject of the person that they're comparing them to. You go, he's an evil person. So the fact that you're doing something similar to something that he brought about, then you are as evil as that evil person in your entirety. Yeah.
And it steamrollers over her quite good point where she says that, it does bother her that she has to do this. She doesn't like doing it, but it doesn't justify stealing.
Yeah. But in invoking the, reductio to ad Hitlerum, he's getting her to say, well, that's, what they're doing is Nazi-like behaviour. So they deserve to be stolen from. The justification for that kind of behaviour. Yeah.
Which is another fallacy, actually, called two wrongs make a right. Which is kind of like a tu quoque, but it's justifying your own bad behaviour based on the fact that the people deserve it because they did a bad thing too. But we'll get to that another time, I expect.
Yeah. Oh, I can hear Trump doing that already. Uh-huh.
So our third example comes from just the best thing ever, which is Fawlty Towers.
Yeah.
And in this episode, various of Fawlty Towers residents have complained about things, poor service mostly, that Basil Fawlty has been giving them. And it takes him to breaking point, which is not that hard.
This is typical. Absolutely the kind of arse I had to put up with from you people. You punts in here expecting to be hand-weighted on hand and foot while I'm trying to run a hotel here. Have you any idea of how much there is to do? Do you ever think of that? Of course not. You're too busy sticking your noses into every corner, poking about for things to complain about, aren't you? Well, let me tell you something. This is exactly how Nazi Germany started. Layabout with nothing better to do than to cause trouble.
Brilliant. And it's so, what's so lovely about it is just listening to the audio and not being, kind of distracted by his sort of spidery movements, is that he stumbles on your waiting on hand and foot. Yeah. He says hand waiting on hand and foot and just carries on. Just, so good. And he didn't call for a retake. He didn't kind of go, I mucked out, we'll do it again. It's just so good. And it's exactly what in Nazi Germany. Layabouts with nothing better to do than cause trouble. So good. Very good. So I, in my research for this week, I stumbled upon this, which is just quite. It's literally the Hitler song. It's on YouTube, and it's by an artist called Rusty Cage. I don't suspect that's his real name, but I can't find anything more about him. And it's a brilliant indictment of, well, I suspect he's a slightly left of centre. He's a left winger. He's a Democrat, probably. So the song's called "Literally Hitler Song," and in the byline in the blurb underneath it, it says "Figuratively Hitler Song." So I think it's more all right. So here's a clip from it, but we'll put in the show notes the link to the entire thing. It's hilarious.
Everyone I don't like is literally Hitler, literally Hitler, literally Hitler. Everyone I don't like is literally Hitler. Let's have a look and see. You got Donald Trump, PewDiePie, and Pepe the Frog. Hand signs, free speech, follow Godwin's law. Pro-life conservatives, grammar police. White men, YouTubers, people who eat meat. Yeah, everyone I don't like is literally Hitler. Everyone except for me.
Everyone except for me. That's Marjorie Taylor Greene's defense. Everyone I don't like is literally Hitler. And everyone except for me. And people would just be sitting there going, yeah, she's a little bit like Hitler, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit. But I love it in there. There is a reference to Godwin's law, but it's in the list of things that are like Hitler, that are literally Hitler, is Godwin's law, which is just a brilliantly meta joke. Love it.
So before we move on to fake news this week,
yeah,
I'm a little bit ashamed, Mark.
Are you? Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Why so?
Well, because we haven't spent enough time convincing our listeners that they need to vote in the midterms and get involved in the democratic process. We haven't. We've just let it go. We've kind of...
Right.
We've let it fall by the wayside this year.
We kind of did make all the difference in the last time.
We did. Last election, undoubtedly, the impact we had by encouraging our listeners to vote was just, you know, it made all the difference. But it's not too late. There is still time.
Right.
Early voting has started in about 4 or 5 states, I think, now. There's still time to register in every single state. If you're not registered to vote, there's time everywhere. Yep. Up until, I think, it is the 9th of October, the first couple of states closed voter registration.
Right.
So there's still time everywhere if you're not registered, or if you know people who aren't registered and can encourage them to do so. There is still time to get involved in the Get Out the Vote process, whether that is by volunteering, getting involved in your local Get Out the Vote kind of programs that are available and are around, or donating if you can, and certainly kind of making your plan of how and when you're going to vote, voting early if you can, and making sure that happens and that all the people that you know vote as well.
Only 44 days left.
Till the midterms. Yeah, yeah. November the 8th.
Sounds a lot, but, you know, November the 8th.
Yeah, and one thing that we did last time was we donated some of our Patreon money to that Get Out the Vote process, and we're going to do that again.
Yeah.
On October the 10th, we're going to be making a donation to When We All Vote. Why October the 10th? Because that is when our next episode comes out. And whatever the Patreon dollars are, the per episode money at that point on our Patreon at patreon.com/ftrump, we're going to donate that. And also then we will match that. So we'll double it, essentially. Yep. And then at the moment, if I donate through a portal that my employer has, they will match that too. So essentially that will quadruple our Patreon money, which is fantastic. So if you have been thinking about becoming a patron or increasing your patron support or anything like that, now would be an excellent time to do it before our next episode.
Even if you just want to do it, if all of our patrons right now just increased it to the top level for a month, then we would quadruple that contribution, or your contribution will be quadrupled and go to the Get Out the Vote.
Absolutely. If you just want to do it for now and then stop, There's no, it doesn't tie you in for an amount of time. During the time that you are a patron or have, or whatever, you obviously will have access to all of the extra material that we put out for patrons, so you can get that stuff. But if you only want to do it for a month, that's absolutely fine. We will make that contribution. You know, we're not a huge podcast. It's not going to be thousands, but it will be hundreds of dollars as a donation. And that can make a difference in some places. So we're proud that that is a possibility that we can do. And obviously, thank you to our patrons who make that possible.
No, absolutely. That's, yes, it couldn't be done without you. And thank you for making it possible to do what we did last time. And plus, of course, you get access to all our back catalogue of free stuff. So you could spend the 44 days whilst you're waiting to vote listening to all of our content for supporting when we all vote.
Yeah.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
I've finally realised, I've had a revelation that in designing this game, Jim, which is a monument to the glory of winning, you've simply done what Albert Speer has done, and I think you should be ashamed.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I see this game very like the 1936 Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the 1937 Paris Expo. Yeah, exactly the same thing. We're head to head, you know, two upcoming empires, head to head, casting deep shadows across the Seine. Uh-huh. Yes.
So our theme this week.
Right.
Basically this week at a rally, I think in Ohio, Trump claimed that he came up with the term caravans for lots of migrants travelling all together towards the border.
Okay.
And we talked before about how he claimed to come up with the phrase prime the pump, which he definitely didn't. Yeah. And so these are other things that he claims, phrases that he claims he came up with.
He invented, right. Yeah.
Statement number one. Now, I shouldn't say it to the people in this room because, you know, a couple of you are a little marginal about this, but I came up with this expression. It's called drain the swamp, right? Drain the swamp.
I hate when he does that. When he kind of, he includes you into his kind of coterie, his inner circle, and you can feel slightly icky, a little bit greasy when you're kind of going, no, I'm not, I'm here under protest in this room, I'm just guarding the door so nobody gets out, that's my job. I shouldn't say it to the people in this room because you, and then you included me in your greasy coterie, but then you're accusing us of being a little marginal. What does that even mean? You're a little marginal about this, and then laying claim to a thing that many of the people in ancient Holland did to reclaim a lot of land. Yeah, okay. All right, it would have been in Dutch, but, you know, it translates the same way.
So statement number two.
Yeah.
I'm the one that came up with the term rigged system. And I said it a year and a half ago pertaining to my system. And frankly, had I not won all these states by massive landslides, I wouldn't be standing here.
It's not true. I was about to say, it's not often that you look at a paragraph and every single thing in it is false. But no, that's we've come, we're used to that. Had I not won all these states... Where is he standing? Where are you standing now? In a golf club in Mar-a-Lago, in the bar, including people in to your inner circle who just want a drink and to be left alone.
Okay. Statement number three.
Yeah.
So I called the media, the fake news media, enemies of the people. I came up with that phrase. I was very proud of it. People said I went too far, but I really believe that's what they are. Okay, enemies of the people.
What? Okay, I came up with that phrase. Enemies of the people. Okay. What about Nazi Germany and communist Russia? Yeah. Okay, right. Oh, Jesus. And to him saying this, do people go, yeah, no, he did. No, that's right. I hadn't heard it before.
No.
Yeah, no. Right. Okay. Right. Well, despite the fact I dismissed it as utter tosh, I suspect Drain the Swamp one is probably real, because he's kind of doing that bit where you lean into the microphone and then you crook your whole arm and go, yeah, come in, listen to this. Yeah, okay. And rig systems, you know, massive landslides. Okay, but then a year and a half ago, pertaining to my system, that sounds very Trump-like. Take this minute, end of the people. Okay, so I think, despite the fact it's very funny, I think number three is the one that you made up, probably because it's very funny.
Okay, so with the other two, which do you think is more convincing?
I think that the Drain the Swamp one I'm quite taken with.
Okay. And number one.
Yeah.
Is.
Yeah.
Real.
Now, I shouldn't say it to the people in this room. Because, you know, a couple of you are a little marginal about this. But I came up with this expression. It's called Drain the Swamp, right? Drain the Swamp.
I hate that. I shouldn't say it.
No,
because I'm not allowed to. And then I say it. So you're instantly taken into his confidence. It's horrible. It makes me shudder. Yeah.
So I mean, almost needless to say, he didn't come up with it.
No, of course he bloody didn't.
Not even in terms of politics and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, it can be literal, but in terms of politics and DC and stuff, the first that I've been able to find a clear example of it, Helen Hunt Jackson said Clear the Swamp, or wrote right. Clear the Swamp in 1881 about politics, about, you know, yes, clearing, wow. Clearing the Swamp was an apt metaphor for how to start addressing, quote, the disgrace to us of the present condition of our Indians. So all of the people who were not in favour of giving the Native Americans their land back and giving them rights with the swamp that she wanted to clear.
It was a disgrace.
There was a socialist desire to drain the capitalist swamp by Winfield R. Gaylord in the late 1890s. Victor
that's
Berger.
A name to conjure with, isn't it? That's terrific.
Victor Berger in 1913 referred to changing the capitalist system as draining the swamp. And so it's been, well over 100 years that phrase has been used.
And nobody's bloody listened.
No.
Nobody's gone, oh, yeah, do you know what? Yeah, he said he was talking about draining the capitalist swamp.
We should probably do that. Yeah, we should get around to it eventually.
We should probably do that, people going, yeah, there's no money in that, though. that's true. Yeah, what are we thinking? What about your vested interest? Oh, yeah, no, I know. You're right, yeah.
So you also think that statement number two is real? And number two...
Yes, yeah.
...is real.
I'm the one that came up with the term rigged system, and I said it a year and a half ago pertaining to my system. And frankly... had I not won all of these states by massive landslides, I wouldn't be standing here.
What?
So
it's a rigged system.
Yeah.
And I said it a year ago pertaining to my system.
So what he's talking about
then is that his system was rigged.
Yeah. So what he's talking about is a different election, like a local election being rigged, because obviously the local Republican didn't win.
He said
he came up with the term rigged system. And when he came up with it, he was talking about his system, meaning the election that he was involved in, I think. I'm being a little bit generous because he doesn't make it totally clear. But I think that's what he's...
So is he referring to the one in 2016 when he won?
Yes, but it was rigged so that he didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
If you remember, 3 yeah. million yeah. illegal aliens voted for Hillary, right. or for Hillary, yes. obviously, which meant that she won the popular vote. But but that was rigged. And, I mean, again, no, he didn't. He didn't come up with that phrase. That phrase has been used for a while.
Yeah.
Back in 1911, it was used in British Parliament, talking about, again, specifically elections. The Democratic Unionist Party, this is from Hansard, believes in legislative devolution where the people of Northern Ireland decide through the ballot box who will be the government without a rigged system such as power sharing. So.
Wow.
And it's been used many, 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 many times since.
The irony is, of course, there is a power sharing government in Northern Ireland now, isn't there?
Yep.
That's why currently Stormont isn't sitting, because there's not an agreement from the party that isn't Sinn Féin, because Sinn Féin won the election.
Absolutely,
Yeah, won the vote, and the DUP didn't, but they're refusing on the grounds that the British government will back them in their indignation at having lost. They're refusing to share the power.
Yeah. And so they get still. No, they haven't learned. 111 years old. Nothing's changed. So, that does mean that number three was indeed fake news. He did not claim that he came up with the phrase enemy of the people, as far as I've been able to find, at least. In fact, that phrase goes all the way back to Shakespeare and probably beyond. Enemies of the people has been used many, 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 many times.
Oh, I like it. I have it in my Facebook profile.
Arguably, it was used by the Romans. They talked about people being public enemies, and it's kind of not. You could possibly translate it from the Latin for public enemy to enemy of the people, but the clearly used in English, certainly by Shakespeare. Yeah. So that means that you have gone all the way up to 48 out of 99. So you have the opportunity to get to 49% on the next episode.
Yes, if I win the next two in a row.
No, well, you're up to 48 out of 99. So if you win the next one, you've got 49 out of 100.
There we go. Yeah. So close. So close to that self-imposed target.
Yeah. 50 hours. Completely arbitrary number.
Yeah. And now I'm disappointed in myself as a human being. Yeah. That's just like bloody Hitler.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Human Trafficking is Not a Logical Fallacy, because we have to talk about what Ron DeSantis did to essentially using 50 migrants from Venezuela as a political stunt. And I've heard it said that the cruelty is the point. I mean, we hear it said that a lot about the Republican Party. I don't think actually that's quite fair in this case. I don't think the point of this was to be cruel to those migrants. It's just that he doesn't give a shit. It's just that they absolutely don't care at all that this is incredibly cruel. The point of it was to get a bit of publicity about how Democrats, you know, talk a good game about embracing migrants and being sanctuary cities and all that kind of stuff. But when you actually send them 50 people who desperately need help, they're really bad at dealing with it. And they'll probably just hit them or something. And obviously, that's not what happened at all. It didn't go the way he expected.
We know it was the rhetoric of bloody Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of think that's all rhetoric, and you go, "Yeah, it's not like that, really." And you know, and the people in Martha's Vineyard, which is what Tucker Carlson was advocating. Yeah, look. Go send people. If you actually send people to Martha's Vineyard, they would do blah, blah, blah. And the people in Martha's, you know, the Democrats would just go, Oh, fucking hell. That's, yeah. We're not going to rise to that. That what we know it's not true. They know it's not true. It's a rhetorical thing. But what does Ron DeSantis do? Actually get 50 people and fly them to Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
You know, not actors that he's paid, not just not a kind of Sacha Baron Cohen type social experiment type film where you just get, well, let's get 50 actors, we'll pay them to go be the refugees and see what happens, you know, or that, yeah. Like the YouTubers do that.
He wasn't punking the people of Martha's Vineyard. He was.
No.
He paid for 50 migrants from Texas, not even from Florida. He sent them, yep, from Texas to Massachusetts, to Martha's Vineyard. And the thing is, it's not just that he sent migrants from one state to another state and then was like, ha, see, they can't deal with it. Yep. It's the cruelty is in the
and
fact...
And then take them back again.
Yeah. The cruelty is, yep, is not in the fact that he sent people to a place where there are lots of Democrats. It's the, yep, fact that there were promises made to these people,
mm,
that were just complete
get them
lies.
On the plane.
Complete,
yeah,
lies, yeah, to get them to agree to get on the plane, basically. They were, first of all, they were told they were, and this is, there's slightly different accounts of this because the reporters have talked to various of the migrants and they may not have all been told the same thing, but they were told that they were going to Boston. They were told that they would be getting, when they got there, according to one person, a surprise present.
Right.
There, which wasn't the kind of best of the things they were told, but,
yeah,
but presumably enough to make some of them go, ooh, and a surprise present too. Cool.
Surprise present, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they were told they would get 8 months cash assistance with housing, food, clothing, transportation to job interviews, job training, job placement, help registering children for school, assistance applying for social security cards and other benefits. None of, wow, which at all is true, because the made up brochure that they gave these people, the kind of like, well, trifold, yeah, bit of A4 paper that they had, yeah, printed stuff on, was talking about benefits that are available to refugees who have been referred,
oh,
by the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and authorised to live in the US. They are entitled to some of these benefits that were being offered in particular cases. They are not available at all to just people who have crossed the border and are either seeking asylum or seeking just, you know, to become US citizens or whatever.
Yeah. Because they're not refugees,
no,
necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is that when these people were sent to Martha's Vineyard, they, no attempt whatsoever. In fact, actively, they didn't contact the people of Martha's Vineyard and say, by the way, there's 50 people coming. They're going to need assistance. It's not even a sanctuary city. And Massachusetts isn't a sanctuary state. So,
right,
there are sanctuary cities in Massachusetts, but it's not... it's not the kind of place that has said, send people our way, we'll cope with them, it'll be fine. That,
yeah,
it's, and yet, when they were sent, the rhetoric from the right was, look, they can't cope with it, they say it's all going to be fine, and then when you send them, they do a terrible job, and they just, they're deporting them out of, yeah, Martha's Vineyard. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene, who we talked about earlier on,
yeah,
said on Twitter, governors should have the same right as Martha's Vineyard. They should be able to deport illegal migrants out of their states and out of the country. Fractally wrong. Because, first of all, they didn't deport the migrants out of their state or their country or Martha's Vineyard at all. What they did was, when they arrived, after helping them already quite a lot in situ, they moved, yeah, them 10 minutes away to the Cape, also in Massachusetts, just basically across, yeah, the water from Martha's Vineyard. And that was done by the Republican governor, Charlie Baker,
who hadn't expected the influx, the plane load of people to arrive.
No.
In a publicity stunt, and yet helped them out and moved them somewhere where they would get some more help.
Yeah. And so all of the rhetoric from people saying, you know, the Democrats, they want to get rid of them, they can't cope, is just not true. They rallied round. And Martha's Vineyard is essentially a kind of holiday destination. And this was done after the rich Democrats who summer there had left for the summer.
Yeah.
Because the summer's over.
Yeah.
So there are some people who live there all the time, but the people that this is aimed at as an attack at aren't even there, basically. But the people who are there year round rallied round, helped out. And this was the message from a civil rights lawyer who talked to the media about what had been done and what they had to deal with.
To the people who find themselves, these wonderful people who find themselves plane wrecked on our island, I have a message for all of them. You are not alone. We have your backs. We are proud to be here for you. And we've got you. If the intention of those who perpetrated this horrendous act was to create a crisis, you have failed.
And that is the response of Democrats to this kind of thing happening.
It's fine.
It's not to deport we'll
them,
deal with
go
it.
Go berserk no. and throw them back out. It's just go, you're fine. Don't worry. You're not alone. We're here. We'll look after you.
Yeah. But the perspective of the GOP because essentially that's what they would do is panic and try and get rid of them and offer no assistance whatsoever. So that's probably what the Democrats will do if they're put into that same situation. But that is the whole thought process.
Let's project that onto the bad guy, onto them, and blame them for it. So actually, the thought experiment, which was rendered into a physical experiment, and we'll get into the ethics of that shortly, they proved to be a complete failure because they sent these people in and unexpectedly, and the Democrats, the people who live there in a Democrat state, rallied round, found somewhere for them to live, gave them something to eat, gave them shelter and food and water and clothing and all that kind of stuff. And then the Republican governor found them other places to stay.
Yeah. Town officials had to post on social media that they didn't need more donations. Like, basically, stop sending us food and clothes for these people, and because we've got too much now.
Yeah.
Because immediately the island's residents were coming around and helping out and doing everything.
Anything you need, we can send it over.
To the point where they had to ask people to stop.
Wow. They didn't have to ask people to start.
No.
They didn't have to go around knocking door to door like brown shirts and ask people to, for God's sake, see it in your heart to help. They were just going, it's fine, folks. Thank you so much. There's so much stuff here. You needn't send any more. Thank you.
And Beth Folcarelli, CEO of the non-profit Martha's Vineyard Community Services, said that residents from across the island and other parts of the country raised more than $175,000 after the migrants' arrival to help them out. And while there were some large donations consisting of multiple thousands of dollars, most were contributions between $50 and $100. And that's just in two days. In 2 days, people who heard about this thing going on were like, well, that's shit. We should help out.
Yeah. Thousands of them.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of
them. So this attempt to show what evil hypocrites Democrats are had exactly the opposite effect.
The opposite. Yeah. Yeah. They it's did exactly really what quite impressive. Democrats said they would do. So exactly the first half of the sentence, well, they say they do this, but if you actually did it, they would go to berserk. No, they just did what they said they would say they would do. That's that bit. The first bit of your sentence, which you're trying to disprove, that's what they actually do. Yeah. The other bit you made up. Yeah.
But
wow.
Whereas I said earlier on, cruelty isn't the point. It's it's not only for Republicans a happy byproduct. It is at least partly the point. Because they didn't only send these people with no notice to a place where there aren't really the resources to deal with it. They also gave them not just incorrect information about what they could expect when they got there and what benefits they would be in order to get them on the plane. They told them untrue information about other things they should do. Like, for example, instructing them to change their address with USCIS, the Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is not the agency which immigrants need to register their address with. So by doing that, they are making it more likely that those people will then be deported for not registering their address they're supposed to register it with.
Yeah.
They also, agents who were kind of loading these people onto planes and doing the paperwork for them, many of the migrants, you know, obviously English isn't their first language. Many of them don't speak English. And agents were helping them with paperwork. They falsified addresses for these people, choosing apparently random homeless shelters across the US as addresses to put on their forms, on their paperwork, from places as far afield as Tacoma, Washington, DC, Florida, with paperwork that they were carrying with them that instructs them to check in with the ICE office nearest their fake address or be permanently removed from the country. With some of them required to check in by Monday. This was the Wednesday night they arrived in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
And they were instructed, some of them, to check into an immigration customs office across the country, like in Tacoma, Washington, from Massachusetts, the following Monday.
By the following Monday.
Or be removed from the US. So they're literally setting a criteria, which means they can then be deported, and then sending them thousands of miles away from where they need to be.
The other way, in order to force that to happen.
Now, that is it. That really does make it seem like the cruelty is the point. It really, that is deliberately making it harder for these people, no matter how hard they try, to follow the rules of what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So you're putting these people in the situation where you're enticing them onto the plane through false promises, and then falsifying the address that they're registered at in order to force them to not be able to comply. Because and in order to force them to be. So what's happening is that the Republicans who are setting this are going berserk and forcing them out of the country, which is exactly what they accuse the Democrats of doing. So under the guise of blaming the Democrats, they're doing inhumane. They're basically kidnapping these people under false pretenses. And then under the false pretense of helping them, forcing them to break the rules.
Yeah.
So that they have to deport them. Wow. It's like bloody Nazi Germany. Wow.
So the latest that I've heard, at least, is that, first of all, there is a sheriff in Texas who is investigating this as kind of basically trying to see if there were laws broken in this process of what happened. And if there were, to try to bring charges against DeSantis and other people who are involved. There's also been a class action lawsuit filed by three of the migrants, at least, against DeSantis and against Jared Perdue, Secretary of the Florida Department of Transportation, which is essentially accusing him of executing a premeditated, fraudulent and illegal scheme centred on exploiting the migrants for the sole purpose of advancing his own personal, financial and political interests, which, I mean, that seems like a slam dunk.
That's exactly the thing that Priti Patel levelled at the human traffickers for the migrants coming across the channel that she failed to stop in any way. That's exactly what they're doing. Yeah. That's the definition of human trafficking. Wow.
DeSantis has claimed in an interview with Sean Hannity that all the migrants signed consent forms to go. Mm-hmm. Again, that is on the basis that they were being promised all of this stuff.
Yeah, all the things that they,
But even with that, the lawsuit alleges that migrants suffering from food insecurity were pressured to sign this document in order to receive a $10 McDonald's gift card. Also, there is a copy of the consent form that one of the migrants signed in the allegation. And as the lawsuit alleges, significant portions are in English and not translated into Spanish. Which is, again, pretty difficult for the person to offer informed consent if they don't speak English.
Exactly. That's not quite. That's a non-consensual agreement. Yeah. So the business that we work in, often when you're filming people, they need to sign a form that says they are giving their informed consent. So, and in I've worked in many countries where, you know, the form is in English and they speak Nepalese, so you have to get that translated there and then and ask them if they understand so that they are informed about the consent.
Yeah, it's not enough just to get someone to sign something they don't understand and then say, well, look, they signed it.
because they're informed. The thing that we're doing means this. Are you happy about we've informed you of the process. Do you consent to taking part in it? And of course, there's got to be what? So that's what they're signing. Or in our business, we get them to do a video consent.
Yeah.
They say, I understand, they can even do it in their own language. I understand what I'm consenting to. I've been informed about it, and I give my consent. That's wow. So if you can't do that not in their language,
no.
Because how are they fully informed?
And that's not a thing which is going to be difficult to prove in court.
No, just hold the thing up and go, hey, look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yes, I mean, this is pretty fucking bad.
Well, it's an enormous scam, isn't it? How much planning has gone into that? Which there's got to be a trail of, because people don't just turn up. You've got to have all of that in process. You know, who printed the brochures? Who chartered the plane?
Hasn't been done accidentally. They didn't. This isn't due to a lack of planning. This is a specific decision to defraud these people. They have come up with lies they can tell.
Martha's Vineyard.
To have a bit of a soundbite, basically, on Fox. Because they sent, although they didn't tell anyone at Martha's Vineyard that these people were coming, they did send a Fox News cameraman with them on the plane so that they could get footage of it. Of them arriving and, arriving to find nothing of what they expected to be there.
Yeah.
So, it's just a publicity stunt that had the additional benefit of completely fucking over a large group of migrants.
Yeah. Jesus H. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
After 3.5 years of gathering evidence, New York Attorney General Letitia James has finally filed her civil lawsuit against Trump last week. Given the number of legal battles Trump is currently facing, I wouldn't blame you for wondering which one this is, so let me explain. When Trump paid his property taxes in New York, he claimed his properties were tiny little rundown hovels too small for even a mouse. But when he used them as collateral for loans, he claimed they were sparkling magical palaces, built from jewels and gold nuggets mined by hand and licked clean by unicorns. I'm only being slightly facetious. According to Tish James, Trump inflated the value of Mar-a-Lago by almost 1,000%. Donald isn't the only target of the lawsuit, which also names the Trump Organization, Don Jr., Ivanka, and presumably just to make him feel like part of the team, Eric. Penalties sought by the lawsuit include $250 million in recovered assets, a five-year ban on Donald buying any property in New York, and a permanent ban on Donald or any of his three oldest children running a business in New York at all. Which sounds to me like a small-town sheriff in a Jack Reacher book telling him to leave town and not come back, but with actual repercussions for someone other than the sheriff. Are we being optimistic in thinking that the Trumps might face some actual consequences for their actions even one time? Maybe. But given that this case is based on documents rather than witnesses, and documents are harder to intimidate, maybe it's finally time for a bit of optimism.
Just as Trump apparently hired lackeys / caddies to follow him around the golf course, telling him he was an all-round good guy, if conveniently skirting around his prowess as a golfer / lynx cheat, it appears Trump's doing the same on Truth Social. There always seems to be a correlation between the amount of times Trump is amplifying QAnon accounts and periods where I'd say he's under stress, Media Matters senior researcher Alex Kaplan told the Daily Beast. QAnon accounts are usually ones that are giving him praise and reassurances, which I'm sure he likes. Ever mindful of the optics of how this affects his previous plausible deniability stance, no, he isn't. He can't remember which lies he's told when and how often or to whom. Trump seems to have foregone all pretense of not knowing who QAnon are, who Q is, unless it's still him and not amateur opera singer and kung fu practitioner Ron Watkins, in an attempt to boost membership of Truth Social and thus allow them to continue to churn a steady flow of nonsense for Trump and his defenders to pluck and deploy in a smokescreen they hope will separate them from any semblance of accountability. I guess, in a way, it's crowdsourcing Trump policy. But just as it says on the tin, folks, the truth is out there.
Trump has not had a great couple of weeks, legally speaking. After his hand-picked judge Eileen Cannon appointed one of his suggestions, Judge Raymond Deary, as special master in the Mar-a-Lago documents case, he probably thought it was going pretty well, especially since the DOJ had to appeal to the 11th Circuit, one of the most conservative appeals courts in the country, in the hope of getting Judge Cannon overruled. But then the special master started doing his job, and he started by saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, "What the fuck is this bullshit?" After pointing out that the court doesn't get to decide whether documents are classified or not, he asked Trump to provide, you know, evidence for some of their claims. Like, specifically, which documents did you declassify, and can you prove that, please? And also, which documents are you claiming the FBI planted? Meanwhile, a three-judge panel from the 11th Circuit, which included two Trump appointees, ruled on the DOJ's appeal. The ruling said, and I'm paraphrasing here, "What the fuck is this bullshit?" Around halfway through their 29-page ruling, they concluded that the district court abused its discretion in ruling for Trump and then spent the next 12 pages pointing out all the ways Cannon fucked up applying the law. Well, ignoring the law to give Trump what he wanted, anyway. The upshot is that the FBI can continue using the documents for their criminal and national security investigations, and neither the special master or Trump's lawyers will be allowed to look at the classified documents.
Cool. It's nearing Halloween / the midterm elections, and even Bill Clinton has appeared out of the swirling mists, pointing out to CNN on Sunday, Republicans always close well. Why? Because they find some new way to scare the living daylights out of swing voters. This year, because we're not yet in their banning Christmas season, RNC Chair Ronald McDaniel pointed back at Clinton and Democrats saying, "You're scaring voters everywhere with the open border. I mean, just last month, 2,000 pounds of fentanyl came across our border. That could kill 500 million people. We're coming into Halloween and every mom in the country is worried. What if this gets into my kids' Halloween basket?" Because, of course, that's why dealers have been colouring their product, not to distinguish it from their competitors, but to attract children to the bright, yummy colours, like some kind of mash-up of Willy Wonka's Candyman and Chitty's Child Catcher. Come to think of it, that's exactly who Ronna reminds me of, a greasy, fat version of Robert Helpman, prancing around in her pointy hair, driving the RNC child cage thinly disguised as a limousine. The cage, that is, not her. Oh, I don't know, though. But it's not just Ronna. Republican Senators Marsha Blackburn and Joni Ernst have been dealing the stuff to the minds of the easily led. From June to July, fentanyl seizures were up 203% at the southern border, Blackburn tweeted last month. And Ernst wrote a few weeks later, enough fentanyl to completely wipe out entire cities in the US has been seized at the southern border. You see, the key word there, of course, is seized, which means it didn't make it into the country. Yeah, but that's irrelevant. Candy-coloured fear is all the Republicans have now that abortion is clearly not a winner for the party, nor indeed are most of its other policy positions. So they've reverted to border control. Oh, and steering well clear of the actual evidence, fact-based truth.
Kash Patel, minor Trump administration official and major post-loss Trump water carrier, spent a considerable amount of time trying to convince TV hosts that Trump really did declassify all those documents. But even he didn't make the claim that Trump seemingly came up with during a Fox News interview with Sean Hannity this week, that when you're the president, you can declassify documents just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it. Imagine if that was true. Is this document top secret? It says top secret on the cover. Sure, but maybe the president declassified it in his mind and didn't tell anyone about it. It's probably fine. What the fuck? But there's a more important news story about Kash Patel that somehow we missed back in May. I'm not saying it's connected, but it was on the day we went to that beer festival in my local village. Anyway, Cash wrote a children's book about the Russia investigation called The Plot Against the King, in which good King Donald is targeted by the wicked Hillary Clinton. And since he is a Republican and therefore doesn't even understand the concept of shame, let alone has any himself, the plot is foiled by King Donald's faithful wizard, Patel. And because the GOP stands so strongly against the indoctrination of children, last month Cash released a sequel, which seems designed to make all Mark's dreams come true. It's The Plot Against the King Part 2, 2000 Mules.
Yay! Yay!
In which two inquisitive minds, Dinesh and Debbie, search for the truth and uncover evidence of a terrible scheme to elect Sleepy Joe instead of King Donald on choosing day. Yes, Dinesh D'Souza's version of the book of the film was just a boring old book full of words for adults who can read above a fifth grade level, but Cash knows his audience and made a version for Trump supporters.
Oh, wow. It's going to have pictures and everything. Uh-huh. We've so got to get that.
Oh, well, it's only $19.99.
That's not a grifter's price at all, is it?
For a children's book.
For a children's book, exactly, yeah. Which, that is excellent. So good. We here at Fallacious Towers are all in for any Trump-based / Trump-adjacent media. After all, we watch Home Sweet Home Alone for no other reason, for God's sakes. Don't you do it, by the way. Save your sanity, become a patron, listen to our episodes on why you shouldn't. And so it seems are the publishers of Servants of the Damned, giant law firms, Donald Trump, and the corruption of justice. New York Times Business Investigations editor David Enrich's new book, out now. Okay, you might not be interested in an expose of the Jones Day law firm, but one anecdote may prick your ears up. Back in the 1990s, a lawyer at a white shoe law firm who worked for Trump confronted him about a $2 million bill he refused to pay. Barging into Trump Tower incandescent with rage, the lawyer was not offered a check and a humble apology, but rather Trump opened a drawer and got out a deed for a stallion, which he maintained it's worth $5 million. Enrich reports that once he'd regained the capacity for speech, the lawyer to whom Trump offered a stallion, supposedly worth $5 million, stammered, "This isn't the 1800s. You can't pay me with a horse." Several questions occurred to us and to Intelligencer reporter Margaret Hartman, including Trump filing systems. Couldn't find hundreds of top secret documents in a storeroom specifically used for storing them in Mar-a-Lago, but could find deeds to a horse. $5 million? Will he have blamed the Horse Valuing Association for not checking the horse's mouth when it turns out to be worth less than Mr. Ed's stunt double? And what was the horse's name, so we can check how it did in our copy of Gray's Sports Almanac from Back to the Future 2? Also, how did the lawyer not bankrupt the firm, and yet they still became subject of Enrich's book? Yeah, I guess we'll never know, because we sure ain't going to take the bait and buy it.
In today's GOP, it's pretty hard to go so far that you lose the support of your own party. Remember, this is a party which still embraces Matt Gaetz. But Ohio congressional candidate J.R. Majewski seems to have done it. You may remember Majewski as the guy who painted a 19,000-square-foot Trump banner on his lawn, leading Trump to give him just about the laziest endorsement ever, where he said, "He's a great guy, and he's in there fighting for whatever the hell he's fighting for, I don't care. I love him, J.R. Majewski." The National Republican Congressional Committee has withdrawn the $1 million of ad spending they'd booked for Majewski's district in the weeks running up to the midterms. It's not because he was at the Capitol on January 6th and has since said he's pissed at himself for not going inside. It's obviously not for his support of QAnon conspiracy theories or denial of the election results. No, the straw that broke the elephant's back was claiming that he had served in Afghanistan. The Associated Press checked and, well, he didn't. He was in the military, spending 6 months loading planes at an airbase in Qatar, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. Military service in general is seen as a positive in a campaign. But stolen valour is too much even for Republicans. Majewski's desperate claim that the reason the AP couldn't find any evidence he served in Afghanistan was that his deployment was classified didn't convince anyone. Least of all Trump, who immediately declassified it just by thinking about it.
In the disunited mess of unlevel Britain this week, good news! A politician does what they said they would do. Liz Truss said she'd cut taxes in order to get voted in, and she has. Yay! Cue the sounds of triumphant End of Empire violins. Is that Nero at the front I can see? Because, oh no, sorry, there's bad news. It's only actually for the 346,000 odd people who earn more than £150,000 a year. They'll get several more £1,000 to spend in a new iteration of the even Michael Gove lambasted trickle-down economic model, which works basically like this. I see a homeless person, perhaps one who was cleared from the street so the people queuing to file past the Queen's coffin could more comfortably be seen to be sleeping on the streets in a national demonstration of subservient forelock tugging. I feel sorry for the fate of that person, so I drive to the nearest rich person's house up the road in Mayfair and I post a £10 note through their door in the belief, faith, hope, nay, propagandise certain knowledge that it will thus benefit the destitute immediately and directly. Well, OK, then, eventually, once growth has occurred, now we've left the EU, the fastest growing trading bloc in the world, by the way. On the upside, the Tories have revealed their true colours as the nasty party again, and that's a party that Labour recognises as the old enemy and knows how to fight. And yet Twitter is alive with hashtag Never Labour. Thankfully, including some tongue-in-cheekiness from Richard Littler, creator of Scarfolk, summing it up with, "If Labour get in, I could lose everything. Never Labour. I'd rather vote Conservative and lose everything twice over than vote for Labour." The project is complete, folks. In our brave new world, Soma has been distributed to all via the Daily Mail, the Period of National Mourning, and Strictly Come Dancing. People described as demonstrating because they're holding up blank pieces of paper in the Monarch Mourning crowd have been arrested. It's all over. With the last one to leave, please switch off the lights. Oh no, they're off already because we can't afford to keep them on.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we used fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our newest patrons, Amanda Bishop, One-Eyed Nick, our straw man level patrons, Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki and Abba R. Buchanan, our true Scotsman level patrons, Kaz Tui, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, and our top patron, Lauren. Thanks so much, everybody. Your support is very much appreciated.
And One-Eyed Nick will actually be joining us on our quiz team on the Friday night quiz. at QED at the end of October, Halloween weekend. There are still some tickets available for QED. It's an amazing weekend-long skeptical conference. So we'll be there all weekend. We're actually doing a talk on the Friday at 3 p.m. about logical fallacies and stuff like that.
Yep.
That's part of Skepticamp, which is a whole day of talks from people within the skeptical community about different topics. If you think that kind of thing sounds as fun as it is, I mean, you don't know how fun it is. It'll be much more fun than you're imagining right now. Then you're like, take what you're picturing and multiply that by 10 levels of fun.
Yeah.
And awesomeness, and that's how great it is. And if you're around, join us for the weekend.
It's a festival for thinkers.
Absolutely.
And we're looking forward to meeting one like Nick. That's fantastic. And you're a patron. Thanks so much. Wow.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallaciouStrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.